I get it. You're burning the candle at both ends, and hiring seems like the simple solution. Maybe you're seeing a drop in inquiries and it seems like it's time for a new website or a rebrand. But before you jump in with both feet, we need to assess some things. It just saves a lot of headaches later. We want to be sure you have a budget, an idea of what you're hiring for, and have thought everything through so that you hire for the right role and set yourself up for success. Now, that doesn't mean everything will go perfectly. Planning doesn't guarantee that, but we've all seen people who have done what someone else did and got a very different result. Welcome to the Digital Hive podcast, where we talk all things marketing for creative small businesses. Today, and over the next two episodes, we're talking hiring, especially hiring marketing help, whether that's ongoing support, a specific project, or even your first employee. In this episode, we're preparing to hire, so I'm walking you through everything you'll need to do or decide before you actually start the search. As you listen to this episode, you might be driving, at the gym, doing the dishes. Don't worry, you can listen and not take notes because I've got a handy download for you. It's essentially a workbook for this whole process, so grab that in the show notes and reuse it as many times as you need. First, you have to assess your actual needs. There have been times where I've been overdoing it in my work life, and buying a meal box has helped tremendously. I don't have to think about and shop for every recipe. I choose between the 20 options and it gets delivered and I cook it. Meals are also a little easier to delegate than, say, your social media content. I like to think about the feeling or result I want and work my way back. Am I exhausted at the end of the day? Am I booked so far out it's getting ridiculous potentially when I'm not making much of a profit anyway? Or am I bogged down by admin? They're just some examples, but they're a lot more specific than I'm busy. Exhausted at the end of the day could mean I need to be factoring in time and space for my health, like a workout and eating well, getting a full night's sleep. Work stress could be at the center of that, or it could be that I haven't seen a vegetable in like a month. Two very different solutions, or at least two very different pieces of a puzzle to try. Now, I could hire someone, but unless they're making me a green smoothie, I'm not likely to see my health improve. Now, in theory, hiring makes you have more time, and then you can use that time to focus on, say, the vitamins, but it actually takes a lot longer than you think to gain that time back. And in the meantime, you dedicated enough time to write a job description, held six interviews, called references, and onboarded a whole human. I also see people far too often who fill that space with another work thing when their original objective was to spend less time working. Being booked really far out could mean you hire help, but creating systems and processes for yourself as well as that future person can save you time too. And if you aren't making a profit but you're booked out, it might be time to increase your pricing. After all, you have to pay that person's salary somehow, and right off the bat, they're not going to be able to take on projects solo anyway. Being bogged down in the admin might mean you need a system, a software, an automation. You could also hire an online business manager, a virtual assistant, or an accountant, depending on the type of paperwork. What I'm really getting to here is that I've seen people hire to solve a problem that could have other possible options, and then with hindsight, we can determine that hiring wasn't the simplest solution. A lot of people hire for a specific reason. They don't then share that reason with the person they hire, meaning they can't talk about it or set reasonable expectations together, and then they later are annoyed or disappointed when that hire doesn't solve the problem. That solution you seek has to be woven into what you hire for. They need to know all about it, and you need to act accordingly all throughout the process. Each of these processes and many other problems in business can be solved by hiring, possibly by hiring a specialist for a one-off project or hiring an employee. You might decide to hire, but get really specific about the role. There are so many nuances that I couldn't cover each eventuality in a podcast, but let's break down some of the decisions you need to make to hire at the right time and hire a great fit person in a well-planned out role. To create this series, I reached out to some trusted sources with a few questions about how they have hired in the past, what they learned, and what they might do differently or sooner with that hindsight. In these three episodes, I'll be sharing my experience and knowledge from being a marketer, working with clients often who have changed provider and might still have some trust issues based on what others have or haven't done, but I'll also be sharing the experience of three guests that I've had on the show before. Those guests are Alison Hannes, pattern maker of Alison Hannes Design and host of the How Fitting podcast. Michelle Winterstein, the brand designer and creative director of MKW Creative Co. and podcast host of the Kiss My Aesthetic podcast. And Rachel Anderson, interior designer of Aurora Interiors. The most common hires small businesses make in their marketing are when they want to move their business to a new level and choose to do that through their branding or a website. Most businesses wouldn't consider hiring an employee for this, so a one-off project involves looking for an expert. Rachel shared with me about when she hired to fit a specialist need. She said that she was ramping up her business to go full time. She wanted to make sure she had good brand messaging and direction. So she joined a branding and marketing incubator in order to get one-on-one help to find her voice and ramp up her social media. Launching her new website was another marker for hiring someone as well, and she found that referral through the incubator. She knew that overarching branding would need to be first so she could find her voice with help and make sure all the underlying copy on social media, emails, and the website were authentic to her and her work. For me, branding was a major thing I decided to hire for after I DIY'd my first logo. You could not even call what I made a brand because it truly was just a logo. I used hard black and hard white even. I decided to invest in my branding not only because I didn't have the skills myself to design it, but because I knew that my taste far exceeded my abilities. So it wasn't something that I would be able to learn in the near future. I wanted to be super proud of my brand design, each individual part, as well as the whole thing. And I didn't want to have imposter syndrome about it because I had designed it. The same was true for my brand photography. In theory, you can DIY your brand photos, but I would again have imposter syndrome. Also, the stress of checking framing and the shots was just too much. In saying that, I didn't hire anyone to help me choose the shots I wanted. I did talk to my photographer about it, but I knew I could figure that part out myself, so I didn't buy a shoot list or a course for that part. I learned some lessons about it along the way, but it turned out really well. On the other hand, I've DIY'd my podcast. I've chosen the equipment with a couple tips from people in communities I'm in, chose the music myself, planned the format, found the guests, and for the most part, I've produced the whole show myself. At one point, I worked with a virtual assistant for transcript editing and social media posting, but that was somewhat short-lived near the end of season two. That only really ended because of my needs at the time, and it was almost a year before I actually did season three, so in a way I probably should have kept going with that, but at the time it just didn't fit into my calendar. It's not that I would never outsource managing my podcast to a production company or hire a strategist to get out of my own head. It's just that right now I'm good with what I'm doing. Then there's the times you need to bring someone onto your team as either an employee or contractor to work with you on a regular basis with recurring tasks or projects. Once you've eliminated everything you can automate, streamline, and processize to save you time, you've got to make a decision. You also could decide to bring someone on to do that process of automating and streamlining and processizing for you, but that's less of a marketing hire in some ways, so we'll leave that for a future episode. Alison shared that she had to turn down client work because she was too busy. She decided she didn't really need to be editing and scheduling her own podcasts, and so she set out to find someone who could do that specific piece of work. She still finds the guests and records everything before handing it over to that hire. Michelle hired to get her time back. She was wearing too many hats herself and needed to stay in her zone of genius. Both of these options are quite different, but they raise great points. Alison hired to free herself up to deliver work, but didn't necessarily hire someone who would contribute to that service delivery. She chose to hire someone who would contribute to her marketing funnel, and more specifically her podcast, so she could continue to show up consistently. Michelle started by hiring a junior designer to help with exporting and organizing client files because it weighed her down and it was the thing she hated the most. Later, she hired people to expand her service offering without stretching herself too thin, and now has members of her team who work with her clients on podcasting, content, and ongoing merch projects. Michelle still designs every brand and is the creative director for their other work, but she doesn't do every part of their output anymore. She also has team members who help with project management and admin as well as her own podcast. We talked about this a little more when I was on her podcast, but she also shares about it frequently and has her team on her own show. I'll link to that in the show notes. Next is knowing what you want. Once I decided I'd hire an expert for those niche parts of my marketing, the brand designer photography, I needed to make a bit of a checklist in my mind of what I wanted. I wanted the right price, so I set a tentative budget of what I realistically had available, mostly so I didn't go overboard and get swept up in all the shiny things and add-ons and get real about whether I could afford them. Then I started to work on my taste and deciding what I wanted. I worked on my brand from a non-visual standpoint so I could explain what I needed. Alison shared that her experience has taught her that business owners should know what they are expecting from the relationship in terms of communication style, outcomes, your involvement, and communicate that to the person you're hiring. She said it's unfair to have expectations of them that aren't made clear to them, which I totally agree with. The obvious part is the deliverables, the output of that person. It's the most clearly stated part of any working relationship. What often goes unsaid is the how. Back to that reason of why you're hiring, that should lead the so-called like return on investment that you're wanting. That's essentially the result you want. For some hires like brand design, what you want is the design to represent the brand you're building, And while a great designer is needed, your brief and also who you choose is super important to that. When I chose to work with Michelle, the same Michelle who shared her insights for this miniseries, I knew I wanted someone who had range. I didn't want my brand to look like the sister brand of every other brand made by that designer. I could tell this not only by the range of work in Michelle's portfolio, but also because she broke down the how and the decision she made along the way as part of her service, and also documented that on social media. So I could see she did it. I didn't have to trust it based off a note on the sales page or proposal. This wasn't necessarily something I was looking for initially. I didn't know quite how I would be able to tell that they'd designed specifically to my brand. But when I saw Michelle breaking it down, it was just a no-brainer. In a funny turn of events, she actually designed two honey-related brands right after one another, and they look completely different because our briefs were different. We actually spoke about it at the time, so I knew she was making a conscious effort to make them different, but I wasn't worried when I found out. That's just one thing on my checklist, but you get the idea. At this point, it's also critical to identify the skills you can teach versus the ones they need to have already, and in some ways the type of person they need to be. This will differ a bit when you hire a specialist for a project versus an employee. But in that same example of the brand design and the photography, I knew that the packages I chose, partially because of my budget and existing marketing knowledge, wasn't going to include a great deal of time spent on discovering what my brand was. I knew I needed to show up with the brief and fill out the onboarding form, knowing that. If I didn't have the experience I do, I would have needed a different package or potentially to work with someone else first. If I didn't consider that and assumed it would happen regardless, even though it wasn't included in the package, the people I worked with would have to fill in the gaps and they can't guarantee they'll guess or assume correctly. That's when you end up with 7 rounds of edits. It just so happened that the people I worked with would totally know if they didn't have enough info, but not everyone can or has the confidence to push back when they know it, but have to make that clear. When I hired a virtual assistant, I knew I understood the tools I use well enough that I didn't have to require my VA to have existing experience, which was really helpful because that's a very specific set of software that I had chosen. I showed them how I wanted things to be done, and I paid them for that time they spent learning. It made it so much easier to hire for that role and made the rate they charged more competitive because they weren't a specialist. Another point to make is that in theory, I could have worked with that virtual assistant and then had them use whatever software they were comfortable with. The way that I wanted to work with them was that if I had little edits that I needed to be done, and especially at the last minute, like I realized the morning the podcast needs to go out that I want to make a change, that I could go into those softwares and make a change. It also meant that I'm the one paying for those softwares, they're my accounts rather than it being the service provider who is the specialist in that software and therefore I'm using their account. This all came back to my needs, how I wanted this person to slot into the business, and therefore that led the type of hire that I hired, but also how I worked with them. I've also seen countless clients who have hired a website designer or developer assuming that they will help them with the website strategy, but not saying anything, and then the first thing they have to do is tell their new hire what pages they want and write their own content, and they're stumped. Helping them figure it out isn't included in the package, but that process also isn't necessarily the expertise of the person they have booked with. I also consider at this stage how each hire will hold me accountable. When I worked with the VA for my podcast, I mean, I had to have things done in advance to give her the time and space to do her work. If a weekly check-in meeting or deadlines for you to provide work to them will help you keep to your priorities, great. You might want to consider how that would work and how they hold you accountable when essentially you're the boss. That'll be ingrained in the plan you make to work together. How you want to set boundaries will impact what type of hire you make as well. The boundaries have to match the role you hire for. You can't hire someone for a project with a set scope and treat them like you pay them hourly unlimited and give them a bunch of admin instead of the one item you're meant to be doing. They need to spend the time on the deliverables, mostly because they know you'll expect those deliverables in the end. You'll also need to consider the timeline, not only if this is a recurring project or a one-off, but also when you need this completed by. If it needs to be done quicker, you'll need to get a wriggle on. If you have time, this doesn't necessarily mean you should wait to hire. Having more time up your sleeve gives you more options of who to hire and removes the need for a potential rush fee. You'll often end up with better results because you had the space to brief and give great feedback. Your hire might get things to you sooner, but if you get the ball rolling now, you'll have more space at the end. An example I have seen of this is those who need a website for an event. They have plenty of time, then all of a sudden they got busy and now they have to rush in the final days because their deadline is so fixed. There's also the instances where you can get a whole new benefit out of marketing when it's done sooner. Say you're an author and you want a website ready for when your book launches. But if it's ready 6 months before your book launches, you can share blog posts, grow an email list, promote pre-sales, and maybe even schedule a podcast tour using the content on that website. This is made possible because you have the time to grow an audience, and you know you don't have to still be working on your website when you're in the midst of those final approvals. I also find it's important to prepare ahead of time and decide how you'll collaborate, especially if this is your first hire. Project management, tasks, handoffs, passwords, and access are all things that cause friction at the start of a working relationship and can take the fun out of things. If you want to use a particular tool, get familiar with it. Changing how you use it on the fly becomes such a time waster. Sometimes you'll get onboarded into your hires process. That's quite common for projects. But for other hires, they'll fit into your process or give you tasks and reminders via email. That might be great for you, but it also might not. They won't know that. You know how you stay organized. This also impacts how they'll fit into the rest of your team if you have one, how they'll communicate, collaborate, and get to know each other. You'll need to decide long before you hire whether this person needs to work with you in person or remotely. I work with so many of my clients remotely, most of whom I've never met in person. That doesn't work for everyone, and there'll be instances like an event where you'll need that person on the ground. Maybe you're cool with them being remote, but have a set idea on what time zones or their usual availability, so you can have a Zoom call with them without it being at 10 p.m. There's one option that isn't hiring, but is an option that a lot of people opt for, and that is DIYing it, but with guidance. They choose to invest in either a course, a strategist, or a coach to help them. I'll dive more into this in the types of hires and this DIYing with help option in the next episode, but it's a part of the decision to hire or not. In this instance, you're investing, but not to outsource. For Alison, she shared that if it's something she wants to learn or would enjoy doing, she opts to DIY. If it's something she thinks needs to be done, but she doesn't particularly want or need to do it, she's looked for help. Michelle shared that she made this decision for her business by learning her professional type. She said that she read Built to Sell, Rocket Fuel, and other business books which identified her personality type as the visionary and maverick type. For her, that meant that she needed someone who was an implementer, processes, systems person to complement and organize her big ideas. Rachel takes a slightly different approach, and it's closer to how I prefer to make the decision. If she's too busy with client work, she says that's an easy answer. During slower times, she typically will watch a couple YouTube videos and hop in herself. But if she gets frustrated or brain dead trying to do the task, then she knows she needs to hire. She says it's not worth the cost savings if it spirals her into a bad state of mind. I totally agree. I'm also a fan of making things fun by having like a charcuterie board or something when I make myself essentially do a task. So say I'm like, okay, podcast editing, I have streamlined this process, but I used to procrastinate editing these podcasts where it was just me because I didn't like hearing the sound of my own voice. It was fine when it was a conversation for some reason, but when it's just me, I found it really hard. So I changed the software I use and now I edit based off a transcript. So sometimes I have to repeat myself because my nose went weird and I couldn't breathe halfway through talking. That happened earlier. I can just literally see it in the automated transcript and backspace the whole section. So I don't necessarily avoid it as much as I used to. But what I used to do was kind of trick myself into making it fun. So I'm only allowed to do this thing after I do this task, or I'm only allowed to make a little snack charcuterie board when I'm doing hard tasks. So kind of just a weird workaround of doing it. The kind of things that you can't hire out, but they need to get done, but they're also not fun. So we're speaking generally here, so this obviously depends on the budget. Speaking of, it's time to talk money, because hiring is an investment and time is money. I prefer that when clients hire me for a strategy, coaching, or to work with them on a short-term basis, that they have cash reserves put aside for the work. This is a little selfish. I obviously want them to be able to afford the package, but there's also a mindset piece to this. I don't mean an abundance mindset per se, but when you know you have an upcoming expense you need to gain sales for, it shifts your marketing focus. When clients have my services already paid for, or at least the money put aside, and they can focus further ahead, we're able to start with the longest term investment items. These are the ones that have the biggest payoff over time, but maybe rely on a decent amount of work upfront, like SEO, their website design, branding, email marketing, and investing time in their messaging. Midterm investments in marketing can be advertising, consistent social media, or networking. Short-term investments are more like one-off event advertising and viral-seeking social media, regardless of how much time they take, they always have a really short time span. I prefer to do a blend of each, while also laying a bit of a foundation that's repeatable or evergreen before we go to the short-term stuff. To do that, I want them to be thinking further ahead in a financial sense so they don't caveat every decision with the income they need, especially since most of the work we do is them DIYing after they work with me, or in sense of coaching, while they work with me. Obviously, any separate investments like a photo shoot, we'd consider in a financial lens as well, but we just want to make sure that they're not thinking of things in terms of like, okay, but I have that invoice due next month for you, so therefore I need to make these decisions. Especially because when it comes to money, people often don't like to say those kind of things. When I signed on my clients on a retainer basis in the past, I would often remind them that we may not see results for 3 months, and the true results will start to show in 6 months, depending on their business model. Naturally, if their sales journey takes 9 months, we won't see much impact on revenue till then, if not longer. We talked about this specifically so they understood how much budget they'd need to set aside before the marketing started paying for itself, or at least partially paying for itself. I'd then be really clear in those reports about the slow growth that we were seeing, and when we were seeing positive results right off the bat, but they weren't usually revenue-related analytics, I'd make that really clear. The reason I default to straight up cash is because we don't know how long those results will take to impact the bottom line, and this is a business, so money is really important to keep things moving. I don't want anyone doing some shuffling around to make a marketing hire. That said, you can start small and build over time. Budgeting ahead of time of a new hire is really important because things like your profit, expenses, and the pricing of your offer needs to account for this hire or project long before you bring them on board. This is why I love an annual plan, or say CEO days, a la being boss. You're reflecting and planning ahead of time. I speak with my clients about a 5-year goal quite a lot and how we can take action now and plan for the next 2 years from now to make those goals happen, focusing only on the things we have control of, rather than hoping someone will approach us or a magical pixie fairy will do everything that bridges that goal with their current actions. It's like if I wanted to win the lottery because I hardly ever buy a ticket. You might start with the minimum viable version, like a DIY logo, DIY website, cobbling together your own social media and email marketing strategy, and testing the market before moving on to investing, and that's perfectly fine. When you're hiring, you'll need to have some idea of what the market rate is for the experience you're looking for. Experience costs money, although there are sometimes anomalies of those who choose to price differently. There's also the option of hiring for a smaller project, then working with that same person every quarter or 6 months to expand on their previous work. A lot of business owners shy away from sharing their budget. This is problematic for two reasons. We can't be sure if you don't know and are hiring without knowing your budget, if you're trying to get a feel for the market, or you just won't tell us what your budget is. A lot of people will assume that you just won't tell us. The second is that we need to establish trust. The reason marketers ask for your budget isn't always so they can price you something based off the maximum of that budget. I'm sure some do, but it's so often a how long's a piece of string kind of thing. The less content you put out or time invested into something by an expert, it's generally relative to the results. If you have $1,000 a month but only invest $200, you'll see much slower results over time. Going back to that goal helps you decide if you want to be flush with cash for now or grow that audience, for example. If we know your budget, we can offer you either one option or maybe three that are within your budget, and you'll make a decision based on what you'll get out of it, hence the need to know what you want. If we don't know your budget, we're kind of just throwing options out there based on other things you've said. If we know what you want and what budget you have right now, we can give you the best options to suit. Personally, I just always figure, great, this is what we have now, let's solve the most pressing issues, and when the budget refills or grows, we'll take that next step. Honesty is simply the best policy. Since you'll only reach out for proposals, quotes, or list a job description after you know what you want, you can do a bit of research to find the going rate. If you have to book calls to get pricing, just make it clear what you want, but you're getting a feel for what options you have before you set your budget. You'll also get much more qualified information. Also, just because someone doesn't post their prices on their website, it's not actually a red flag. It might be that they don't want others to know how much their clients are investing. I've heard that from some coaches, that their clients were actually getting comments from other people about how much they were investing. So then they took it off their website. It also might be that their pricing is highly tailored to the project. And then others choose to have you register your details to get a pricing breakdown. Everyone has their reasons, and it'd be less than 1% who are doing it to lure you in and then spring a price and pressure you to sign up on the call. If you want to chat to someone but don't necessarily want to waste their time and yours, you can always ask ahead of a call what their starting rates or a range is. I asked Alison, Michelle, and Rachel how they budgeted for their first hire. For Alison, she said she knew she could start small, and she figured that if she could buy back some of her time, she could earn more with client work, so she took the leap. Michelle considered the competitive hourly rate for her role she was hiring for against what her fee was to the client to calculate her profit margin, since she first hired for someone who would work on billable tasks. Essentially, she was able to up her billable total. Rachel budgeted by understanding her monthly financial commitments and weighing it against the time it would take away from her hourly client work. She said it was an easy decision for her first year to ensure she stayed focused on building client relationships. We talked more about that client relationship process when she was on the podcast, so that's linked in the show notes if you want to hear more about that. I have a separate account for savings in my business account, so that helps me see the total separately between my cash account and anything I've put aside. I've also historically made a spreadsheet of my projected income based on already sold packages. This was mostly back when I did retainers, so I kind of knew what my ongoing income was going to be and my expected expenses. At first I did this to track how many weeks of running costs I was covered for, especially when I was leaving my part-time job. And I later used it to make decisions to hire, since I've not hired for billable recurring tasks myself. I've worked with contractors for already confirmed projects, but that's a little different since they're part of the proposal process. It was a simple spreadsheet, but it also helped me to see not only whether I could afford things, but how much my expenses were adding up to, so I could make decisions about software or other tools I was using to expand that runway or make room for a different investment. My process hasn't changed much, to be fair, and I still try to keep everything as fluff-free as possible, especially on that recurring cost side. So you've figured out why you're hiring, what for, what you hope to get out of it, and now you have a budget. Before we start to hire, you've still got some preparation to do. You essentially need to prepare both the business and your availability to make this work. The consensus of what to prep was pretty unanimous. Michelle wishes she formalized a company handbook earlier. Alison said she created extensive standard operating procedures, also known as SOPs, but found that they weren't clear enough when she actually hired. She thinks she did the best she could to prepare beforehand, and things naturally came up once they started working together that they improved on. I'm a big fan of starting SOPs and then having your hire take ownership of updating them. They're the most new they'll ever be right at the start. So they'll add those extra nuanced steps that come so naturally to you. I once hilariously trained someone in a past role on how MailChimp worked and how we had everything set up for specific business. And the very next day she logged in to find MailChimp had changed their entire interface. After I recovered from my brief laughing fit at the ironic timing after years of no major changes on their interface, we were back on track 5 minutes later and she updated the process in the SOP. Easy. The buttons had all moved and a couple phrases were different, but the majority of it was the same. It was a great welcome to the marketing world where buttons move constantly. Rachel said that moving forward, she wants to make sure she has her files in order, having an organized portfolio, brand standards, and examples of work she's done herself, so they can see how she writes in her own voice. Files are one of the biggest blocks for new hires. They need to do something that takes 5 minutes, but wait an hour or a day for someone to be able to share the file. They're not necessarily just sitting on their hands while they wait for that, but it does certainly mean that they have to change task and then come back to it, and it's a whole process. There's a checklist in the download, but logos and any other part of your brand design, brand photography, fonts, and your standard operating procedures don't have to be locked down like it's the Mona Lisa. I love a Google Drive folder or Dropbox, but if you have an on-site server, that works too. Your brand rules, how to use each part of your existing messaging, brand design, and imagery should all be documented so it's clear for everyone instead of being interpreted at every review. Beyond the specific items to get you prepared, time tracking is a great place to start. It helps you paint a more accurate picture. This might illuminate just how much time you spend on each thing, so you can see really clearly what's taking over and also where things might be taking longer or actually less time than you thought. If you keep time tracking through creating automations, hiring an expert, or bringing on someone to work with you regularly, you can also track how that split shifts. I love Toggle, but there's plenty of great options, so I recommend making a decision based on what integrates with other software you use to make it super seamless. That might be your accounting software or your task tracking tools. You might also want to check what you can use for free to keep that budget really healthy, and also what reporting and comparing you can do. When you go through this preparation process without even hiring the person yet, but just creating the documentation of SOPs, what you need them to do, and the job description, it can unlock more information about how you want to move forward. Documenting this not only provides the list to your team, but it also means it comes out of your own head so you can move on to other important work. It may even unlock better ways of you doing the work so you actually lessen your reliance on this new person. However, that doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't hire yet. You don't want to wait till you're overbooked to hire, since it takes time to bring people up to 100%. This added space might be just what you need to avoid burnout during that hiring process. My last tip, and often the longest to figure out since it's a slow building of knowledge, is that you need to know the basics of your marketing. This isn't a quick tip situation, so I'll just give you the highlights, but we've talked about these on past episodes and I'll dive into them more in the future episodes as well. Essentially, this is what I focus on most with clients as a strategist and coach. Part of the importance of this is because only a business owner can truly decide on most of them unless you're hiring someone to help you figure these out. You are the business owner, and so you are the one that's stuck with the consequences of these decisions after the fact. The other reason is that without clarity on these, you tend to have to redo work multiple times and give lots of feedback so the work is more unique to your business because the brief for the work isn't clear enough. It's frustrating for you if you don't fix it quickly, and it's frustrating for those you hire. Those basics include who your customer is, your mission, your brand voice, and if you aren't hiring a strategist to create one for you, a bit of a marketing plan. Even if you're hiring a specialist, they'll only help you make a plan for that part of your marketing, not a holistic plan. They might also create a mini plan for themselves and action it, but not go to the effort of breaking it down for you to understand if that's not part of what you've actually hired them for, because it takes a lot more time to just do that. You as the business owner need to be the one to maintain the consistency of output from everyone you hire. Even if you do work with a specialist, they'll still ask you some questions that you'll need to give reasonably thought out answers to so that they can take action based on that strategy. There's also a whole other layer of understanding the terms, analytics, and averages of each of your marketing channels that you outsource so that you can have productive conversations and hold your hires accountable. We'll talk about managing in part 3, but how can you truly decide whether someone has experience in Google Ads if you don't know how to log into your account? It just adds another layer that might be totally fine, but also could turn sour. With everything I've just run through, you'll create your brief, not just a job description, but your fully detailed brief. You'll combine everything you've decided and prepared so far into a detailed description of what you're looking for. This will hold you accountable as you search and make that hire and ultimately manage those you work with. It's a lot to think about, but essentially that's what this phase is for. It's taking the time to mentally prepare so that when you're actually hiring and managing, you're closer to that perfect path. Download the document in the show notes to give you a guide as you work through this process, and I'll see you back here in the next episode to chat about the hiring stage. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Digital Hive podcast. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you could share it with a friend or on Instagram and tag me at Honeypot Digital. To find out more about Honeypot Digital and the work I do, or to find more episodes of the podcast and handy tips for small businesses marketing online, head to honeypotdigital.com.